The Invisible 18th Century Hand in American 21st Century Strategy. Adam Smith, the worthy 18th century Scottish economist who inclined to the American side in the Revolutionary War and sympathized with colonial complaints about British mercantilism, commanded a very enthusiastic press in the United States through the last quarter of the 20th century. Ties bearing his embroidered profile were said to have sold far better in Washington than in, say, London or Edinburgh. For the 21st century, however, some diminution of worship may be expected. Smith's vaunted invisible hand, the inerrant guidance of the market, has become too fumble-fingered for a growing percentage of doubters, especially advocates of strategic thinking and the need to consider political, economic, and cultural externalities, ignored by more than three decades of marketplace orthodoxy. As a side benefit of their great power analyses, historians such as David Landes, Paul Kennedy, and Jonathan Israel have held forth at some length describing how Smith's market theory and blinders caused him to misjudge or ignore many political, military, competitive, or strategic factors that influenced the rise or decline of the Dutch and British global economies. Luckily, attention is also growing to the inadequacy of pure market theory in explaining developments in the United States. Billionaire investor Warren Buffett, a critic of the proliferation of financial services and speculations in the United States, also poked fun at Smith and his hallowed marketplace. Instead of finding the invisible hand in stratagems such as derivatives, he likens such instruments to an invisible foot kicking society in the shins. We will return to Buffett's critique in Chapter 10. Trade specialist Prestowitz, preoccupied with strategic thinking, criticizes American economists for ignoring real-world adjustment costs like closed factories, blighted neighborhoods, lost skills, and uprooted communities. They cling to this myopia, he contends, partly because they prefer the simpler world of Adam Smith and David Ricardo, with its magic unseen hand and climate-controlled, comparative, advantage-based trade. In The Wealth of Nations, adds Prestowitz, Smith argued that the objective of economic activity is consumption, but the development models of Asian economies all involve the suppression of consumption, along with a heavy emphasis on saving, investment, and production. In Singapore, for example, the government mandates large contributions to a pension fund. In Japan, consumer credit is limited even today. Asian savings rates, at 30% to over 50% of GDP, are higher than Western rates have ever been except in wartime, which is perhaps not surprising given that industrial development is seen in Asia as a key element of national security and avoidance of Western dominance. Worst of all, he concludes, the Bush administration has no policy or strategy and little understanding of many of the factors that should be involved in one. Similarly, Jared Diamond, author of Collapse: How Some Societies Succeed or Choose to Fail, noted in a 2003 lecture that officials of the George W. Bush administration had acknowledged concentrating on situations headed for crises within 90 days. No framework this short-term in orientation is compatible with strategic thinking. In the case of the Bush administration, perhaps the magic of the marketplace leaves no room for the clutter of awkward cultural and political externalities. Faith may also be an explanation. In the triangle of evangelical belief, state, and marketplace, laissez-faire has two wellsprings, not one. But there have been no heavenly interventions on behalf of past leading international debtors. The United States is on its own.